Welcome, everybody, to my podcast on stressing values. We have the immense pleasure of welcoming Jenny Kitchen, Chief Executive of Yo-Yo Designs, who's going to describe her journey through the business world in the design industry and how she's managing her stress levels, and more to the point, how she uses values to drive the business. So welcome, Jenny. I'm so pleased you could join us.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure, absolute pleasure. For the purposes of our viewers, perhaps you could just tell us a little bit about yourself and your journey into Yo-Yo.
Yeah, of course. So obviously, Jenny Kitchen. I have been running Yo-Yo for about 13 years now. Yo-Yo is a brand and digital agency. And so we work with a lot of different types of clients on how they communicate, how they position themselves in the world, and then their visual identity, their creative communication, both sort of, well, mainly online, sometimes offline, but mainly online nowadays.
Yeah.
So building websites and tools and things like that. My journey, I've always been involved in marketing and communications somewhat. I went to university, typical route to university at 18 years old, doing linguistics, which had nothing to do with my end career necessarily.
Isn't that funny? Yes.
But now looking back, I can sort of pick some of the threads that came through, because linguistics is around the science of language, but there's a lot in terms of communication in there and how people communicate and work together and collaborate. And as we'll sort of talk a little bit more on, that's definitely sort of been a big feature in my business journey.
Fantastic. So how did you get involved in Yo-Yo Design then?
So I was when I was at university, then I was doing I was working in an experiential agency part time and trying to do my studies alongside that. And so that gave me a real sort of taste of agency life and working for different companies. I did a lot within telecommunications,
okay.
Orange, O2 and the like, which was a lot of fun in the 2000s. There was lots of money going around and lots of creativity and entertainment and things. So
fast growing, yes.
Yeah, it was definitely a lot of fun. So that was working in London in quite large kind of corporations there, or quite large agencies. And then a chance came about. I met two creative directors who had started an organization called Yo-Yo. But they were two creative directors. They didn't have the business side, the client service side, and the technology side. So myself and another partner joined at that time.
Oh, right.
And we were the four of us for very long. We hired a designer, then we hired a developer, and then it sort of snowballed from there as we grew the business.
Whoa. Now, I'm sure a lot of people watching this will be very interested in that journey. I mean, everyone talks about founder syndrome. Everyone talks about how possessive founders are about their dream, their baby. And yet you've come in from the side, if you like, and they've been going for 3 years. How do you manage that relationship? How did you get on board with the vision? How do you bring your new techniques to it and the new sort of business focus?
I mean, there's two sides of it, I guess. Kind of, firstly, I'm very lucky in the sense that they were founders with a vision, but that vision was to do great work.
Yes.
It wasn't like they had a particular sort of way of doing things, and they're very open-minded. And so they welcomed ideas into the mix, and also knew where my strengths lay and where their strengths lay. So quite quickly, I moved from client services director to managing director, and then CEO. And it was just, it all felt very natural, natural progression. And so I didn't have as many conflicts maybe sort of between that sort of within that founder sort of relationship. But on the other side of that is that business relationships, board of directors, there was four of us at the time, there's now
yes.
two.
Okay.
and all very amicably kind of separated. But it was, you know, it was a challenge. And when you're running a business, it's like a marriage. It's such a huge, huge investment in time and the investment that's needed to make sure that that relationship is strong.
Yes.
Because everybody knows when the directors aren't getting on.
Yeah, you know, it's a small space, isn't it? Yes.
Oh, absolutely. And everyone can see that. And if you're not aligned as directors, then you just pull the business in such different directions. And that can have real detriment to the business, your clients, your team. Thankfully, that didn't happen very often, but sometimes it did. And the quickest way of sort of solving that is, like any relationship, it's talking, it's communication, it's openness, it's empathy, it's kind of compromise. But it does need an investment of time. And I think lots of people don't realize how challenging it can be.
I was going to say, so what form did that time take? Did you go down to the pub, or did you go away for a weekend, or how did you do that?
Mainly going down to the pub, yes, definitely. But also very structured conversations around strengths and weaknesses, around what things we like and don't like. We sometimes got external individuals into the mix, kind of consultants and things which helped unblock different challenges at different times in our journey. But mainly it is just, we found, sort of creating that space to just be. And, you know, sometimes we're not at our best. And sometimes if we're really stressed, then we might say things that we later regret, or in the moment we might have an emotional reaction to something and feel sort of anger and frustration. But knowing that that doesn't necessarily mean that is the person's perspective.
it's just that moment in time. Yeah.
It's just that moment in time. And sort of, you know, you'll know this sort of better than most, just around that sort of that, what stress does to someone.
Yes.
And when people are stressed and when people are kind of not at their best, then, you know, all of the sort of energy goes into just very, very laser focused on something in particular, and thinking can go very black and white.
Yeah.
And it's never the right time or place to make major decisions.
No, so, that certainly can't. That wouldn't be the right time at all, would it? So would your advice be to, I'm sure lots of people are watching this saying, oh, that talks directly to me. What would you say to them in terms of how finding that time, having those conversations? What would be your recommendation?
I think it's, well, a few different things. Sort of, firstly, I think there's something to say about ego and about understanding that sort of coming into those conversations, then there may be elements whereby you feel very strongly about something. But there are times where you need to act as with that strength, and other times you just need to let it go. And even if you think that you've got the better answer or the better vision or whatever, sometimes it's about being kind, not right. I remember who said that originally, but it's better to be kind than to be right. And I think that going in with that sort of empathy and kindness is really important, because we've all got our strengths and weaknesses. We're all good sometimes and pretty bad other times.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, no one's perfect, are they? But there must have been times when either you or one of the other members of the board had a particular thing that they felt, for logical and sensible reasons, was really, really important and might have been at odds with. So even if they wanted to be kind, they just thought this element, this thing, was too important to kind of just compromise on.
Yeah. One of the things that we did, which was really, really valuable, but sadly it was about 5 or 6 years in, and I wish we did it before.
Okay.
But doing some form of DISC profiling and doing some form of kind of understanding how people understand.
Is that the Thomas International, so psychometric profiling?
Psychological profiling, yeah. Exactly. One of the examples that I always use is my business partner, Greg. Then he acts a lot on emotion. He's not a spreadsheet guy.
Yeah, right.
And And there will be times in the early years when I felt really strongly about something. And so I would present loads of data, loads of spreadsheets, and be like, this is the logical conclusion. And
of course it is.
An hour, yes. Going through everything. And he'd be like, no, I don't feel it.
I would not. That's the key word, isn't it? I'm not feeling it. Yes, yes.
Absolutely. And so, you know, that was never going to work, no matter how much. No matter
how pile much spreadsheets is a foot high, it's not going to work.
Exactly. But once we had kind of more conversations about how we can influence each other, how we can have an impact, how each other consumes information, and how each person makes decisions, then just again knowing more about each other helps us to speak in a better way, to know when someone really means it, or when they will let it go.
Interesting. Oh, that's really valuable. I'm sure everyone's going to take notes of that, and I shall make a note to comment more on the DISC, because I've used it myself and I found it so, well, just frighteningly accurate and incredibly illuminating. So you've kind of worked through all that stuff. You've got the business seems to be thriving. Where do you want to take it over the next 5 years?
So over the next 5 years, I mean, I have no real interest in trebling, quadrupling the business, because for me, the business is my baby, 100%, but I have got other interests as well. I've got a family.
Yes.
I've run a charity. I'm a trustee at another organization. And so there are kind of other elements to me.
Yes.
And that is the same as my business partner. And so for us, it's not about growing the business to 100 staff. We've got a wonderful team, and it is about continuing that growth, but incremental growth based on making sure that we can be true to our values.
Yes.
And that we can continue doing some fantastic work. But we're not after growth for growth's sake. So I guess that's one piece. Another piece is that it's been incredibly difficult market in the last year.
Really?
And this is a repeatable kind of conversation that I've had with many, many agency owners across sort of all sorts of different mix, whether it's PR or digital or sort of branding. And it's just very tough. There is a combination of sort of lots of different elements, a sort of post-pandemic hit, potentially uncertainty politically, uncertainty in the economy, lots of organizations pausing on work and development and things. Oh,
yes.
So it's in 13 years, last year was the worst year by far. And that's a similar message from, as I said, kind of, you know, lots and lots of different people in the sector. Thankfully, over the last 3 months, it's really picked up again. And we're back to a very, very good kind of position and got good kind of, a good future. But one of the elements of that, it means that it has been huge pressure on the team.
Yes.
Pressure on the team, because they're having to do more in less time. They're having the sort of stress of having less money going around in terms of being able to sort of offer profit share or offer sort of time off and training and sort of different things like that. So I guess my goal in the next 5 years is to really change the tide on that and get us back to being an employer that, you know, I'm still very proud of how we are, but at the same time, I want to have less pressure on our team. So that is my biggest goal over the next kind of few years, is to get the business into a good shape. And a lot of it isn't in our control, and it is kind of, you know, the sign of the times, but we've got lots of tactics in place now to be able to make that change. So that's where I'll be focusing on.
Wow. That's really interesting. A lot of people I talk to have the same, I mean, because London and the Southeast is of, you know, majority service industry. So it's how you allocate time to projects.
Is
this constant challenge, and giving people some downtime and enabling them to refresh and stuff. So what do you think you can, this is a constant challenge. I mean, what are you thinking? What are your tactics do you think you can adopt to help smooth out the workflow and give people more time?
More time. I mean, technology is high up there.
Okay.
And different platforms. The use of AI is, we're starting to sort of see more and more sort of use cases. It's still, in my view, still needs to tread with caution.
Yes.
And I still think that it's not the silver bullet, but there are lots of sort of occasions, especially when it comes to things like recording meetings. It will show the actions from that meeting and store all of that. And what we're looking to do is using monday.com, which is a project management platform, but connecting up all of these different sort of technologies so that tech can help do some of that heavy lifting.
Yeah.
And that, you know, there's that whole fear factor of sort of people thinking, well, you know, if technology is there, then do I still have a role? Do I still have a job?
Yeah.
I don't have those fears. I very much think that actually the technology can help to support our day to day. I mean, at the moment, everybody I speak to is doing 2 jobs, 3 jobs, working such long hours.
Yes.
And if technology can reduce some of that, which we're already seeing it in the business, is doing that. Then happy days, you know, that's definitely going to be an area of big focus. So that's kind of, that's over the next 12 months. We've got lots of sort of programs and work streams around the process and the operation side.
Okay.
The other side is being really focused about what it is that we do. I think over the years, many people fall into this of, when you can offer a service, then actually you can do it. If someone comes to you and say, okay, well, you do that, you mostly do this, but actually we've got something that's a bit left field. And we, especially if it's a cause-based business or it's a business that really ticks a lot of boxes for us, then we're more likely to say, oh, actually we could have a go at that. We could figure that out.
Yeah.
And you know what, like 99% of the time we do, but sometimes it does come with a cost to the people because anything that's new is, takes a bit longer.
It takes ages to get up to speed and to get good at it anyway.
Exactly. And so being much more sort of focused on key service lines and knowing exactly what we're good at, that's going to be again a sort of a focus to help that.
Yes, I'm sure that's right. And I'm hoping people are taking note of that, because I'm seeing almost the opposite, that people are under financial pressure spreading out and taking, oh, we'll grab more bits of work, which aren't necessarily the things they're good at. And over time, that's going to compound the problem, I think, for them. So I think a really good tip there. Thank you. So you mentioned value several times, and they're clearly very important to you. You've gone down the B Corp route. What role do values play, and why did you go B Corp?
I think sort of values have always been part of us, and not necessarily kind of, you know, creating 3 words and then putting them across your website and then, you know, not thinking about it internally.
Yeah,
that's not what I mean by values. I mean sort of guiding principles.
Mm.
And they evolve, but they are very sort of I guess kind of structured around key messages, which is kindness has always kind of come into the way that we lead the business and the way that we treat one another and the way that we treat clients, because I believe it gets the best out of people and I believe it gets the best work, and so kindness is always a sort of big value that drives a lot of our the way that we work with one another. Another value is around curiosity and challenging ourselves. So that whole idea of kind of being curious about the world and, you know, actually we've done it like this, but do we need to do it like this again?
Yes, could we do it differently?
Yeah. Let's be curious about this. Let's think about things in a different way. Let's not do things blindly because we've always done them. So that sort of curiosity and sort of challenge is absolutely critical in a creative agency, but I think it's critical in any business.
Yeah.
it's definitely kind of one of the things that lead us. And transparency and openness and honesty is also a big area as well for us. And that means kind of being as open as possible, open-minded as possible, but it also means transparency in the way that we lead the business and the way that we manage the team. Being open to how we make decisions, sharing financial data, sharing vision, and making sure that everybody is as informed as they want to be, so that they have then the power to be able to comment, input, challenge.
Yeah.
Things that are happening. And you can only do that if you empower and educate and be transparent about what it is that you're doing.
Yeah, totally.
Those are sort of some of the kind of key areas and things that that lead a lot of the way that we work with one another. And then the second part to your question about B Corp, we became B Corp about 4.5 years ago now. Before it was very cool for agencies to
become B Corp. It's really got suddenly very popular, isn't it?
It's very, very popular, which is fantastic. And I sort of feel like I have a small part to play in that, because I'm a B Corp ambassador and I probably talk to, I don't know, dozens of different businesses every year about going through the business, the B Corp process. And that's agencies, but also other businesses. You know, I'm a very, I don't believe that it's a competitive advantage. I believe that it is something that everybody needs to do and every business needs to do. We did it as a result. It was a bit of a personal quest of mine. I got very into environmental activism and about sort of 5 years ago or so. And then I didn't quite realize that I didn't put the two together. I thought that the environmental activism was very much my personal life. Oh. My business life was my business life. And then I started reading more around the subject, around how Unilever or the like baked in some sustainability goals and principles into their day-to-day.
Absolutely.
And then that led me on to reading more and more, and then I found B Corp. And it just felt absolutely right, being profit, people and planet. So profit isn't a dirty word.
No.
Making money isn't a bad thing. I mean, ultimately, we need money in order to achieve all other goals, whether that's paying people the right amount for maternity leave versus, paying people the right wages versus actually making decisions in terms of our supply chain, even if it's a bit more expensive to buy eco-friendly items. You know, money is needed for all of these. So I love the way that it did put that at the level with people and planet. And it was a structure that enabled you and your business to have really like best practices in terms of governance, in terms of how employees are treated, how you work with the community and all of that. So it was a very much, it is people and planet, and it is an environmental and sustainable program and sort of accreditation, but it's more than that. It's actually running good businesses.
You're running a good business. Yes,
running a business, exactly.
Wow. It certainly seems to chime with all the values that you sort of listed. Just want to come back on that. We talk a lot about values, and people will push back at me and say, "Yeah, that's all right, Colin. I get that, and it's always very nice to do to have those values. But what happens when you get that stubborn employee or that very challenging supplier? You know, when it's not working."
Yeah, and I think that's. I remember a few years ago, my dad challenged me and said, "Well, you can't let go of that person. You're a B Corp."
Oh. That's an interesting challenge, yes.
Yeah, it was. And I thought, yes, but being a B Corp doesn't mean to say that you can't run a business in a way that you need to run a business. And sometimes in a business, then a supplier isn't right, or a client isn't right, or an employee isn't right.
Yes.
And so being a B Corp doesn't mean that you can't have those difficult conversations, and having the values that we have doesn't mean that we don't have those challenging conversations. And in fact, the whole honesty and openness value means that we do have those conversations.
You kind of have to, don't you, really? Kind of
exactly. And the thing is, I do genuinely believe that people are good. People are good people, and that people want to be doing the best for them and their families potentially, or their career aspirations. And if something isn't working and you've got a stubborn employee, or you've got something that just isn't working, there's normally a reason for it. And they're not happy. The role isn't right for them. The environment isn't right for them. Something isn't working. And actually, it's far better to put it out on the table and say, this is happening. It's not working. What do we do about it together?
Yes.
And then sometimes then that does result in the employee leaving. Mm. But I love the fact that pretty much all employees that have left under those circumstances, then I still speak to, and we're still friends. They still attend Yo-Yo events years later.
Okay. Oh, that's lovely. Yes.
So there's a way of having difficult.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. The end result might be the same, but you don't have to. There's not necessarily the route you take can be different. I found that interesting, that it's always the chief executive or the boss that has to instigate that conversation.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah. That's in my mind as well. I mean, we had one team member. I mean, this is years ago now. But he then became a policeman, and he thrives, you know, completely different. And I knew that he wasn't succeeding.
He wasn't quite doing what his real passion ambition was. Yeah,
exactly. But as you said, it's more likely than not that it comes from a CEO or sort of the senior sort of leader and things in that, to identify it, because I can see holistically everything
that's happening. I suppose that's true. It's because you've got that vision. Yes. I've always been slightly daunted, because when you have that conversation, then they say, well, I'm not very happy. And you think, well, why didn't you say?
Yeah.
But they don't until you unlock that door, really, for them. It's very interesting that. And I think that's where your values come through. You have to be open, otherwise you're not helping those people. They're going to be stuck in that limbo for quite a lot longer, unless you sort of break the mold, if you like.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So you said, when I asked you about what's your target for 5 years, what's the plan, you have a lot of other things: trustee, charity, family, of course. So how do you juggle your time and the stress management bit? How do you cope with all that?
Sometimes well, sometimes not. I think it's a constant work in progress.
Yes.
And there's lots of things that you sort of learn and pick up, and tips and tricks kind of over the years, and things that have really helped. I think there's an element of understanding your non-negotiables and saying, this is not going to move. I have to be there. I haven't missed a single sports day. I haven't missed a single, you know, those.
Yes.
It's just not in my interest.
That's not going to happen. I'm going to be there.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, thankfully it hasn't ever clashed with something absolutely major, but I think even if it did clash with something major, I would still say no, because those are the things that fuel me. So understanding those kind of non-negotiables is really, really important. What I've learned more over the years, and again, work in progress, but is that health is the key element, and you need to constantly be looking at your health, whether that's kind of the food that you intake, your alcohol levels, the exercise that you do. Sleep is so important. So you've got all these sort of different things. And when I get to a point, which happened last week, but when I get to the point where I'm really, really stressed out, and I look at it, I go, oh, well, I haven't been sleeping well over the last couple of days. And actually I went out with a friend there and we've probably had a couple of glasses too many, or, you know, it's quite easy to look back and say, well, that is why I wasn't looking after myself.
Yeah.
So there is a huge amount of self-care that I think that needs to happen when I think everybody needs a lot of
self-care.
Well,
everyone, yes. That's good advice for anyone. But I think particularly when you're in such a job with great responsibilities. I mean, how do you score yourself as a delegator?
Pretty well, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's the side that over the years sort of perfected quite well, because I think I was talking the other day with someone around succession planning.
Okay.
And the term succession planning comes into kind of people sort of dialogue when typically when they're exiting a business, and it's, yes, sort of succession planning of, you know, what am I going to do afterwards, and who's going to take that over. But my view is slightly different, and I think everyone should always be thinking about succession planning. And if you go into it with that viewpoint, then whether that's sort of, you know, the next few months or the next few years, then you're identifying the people that can take on your roles or some of your hats.
Yes.
And you're working with them to train them up to take that over at some point. And with my role, like many CEOs, then I've got so many different hats.
Yeah, you have.
Marketing,
yeah,
finance, HR, business strategy, client management, all sorts. And so over the years, then what I've been doing is to identify key individuals that will take some of those hats, and then working with them to train that up. So they are my succession plan. And that has been working incredibly well. And from the client services piece and the project management, I don't get involved in most of that. Whereas a lot of agencies our size, then the CEO would be much,
yes,
more
all over it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But identifying the right people, give them the right skills, give them the flexibility and the space that's needed. Because as well, it's very easy for me to get involved and say, oh, I'd do it like this.
Yes.
But actually, they will do some things that are maybe worse than me, but they'll do so many things that are much, much better than me. And actually, you just have to leave. Exactly.
Yeah.
Be there for the major issues, of course, and be there in terms of time and mentorship and training, but actually leave them to it and get out of their way.
Yeah.
And if you've identified those people well, which I like to think that I have, then actually the delegation is much easier.
I was going to say, if you've got those building blocks in place, then the delegation is much easier. That's right. Oh, that's very, very powerful. Thank you. Well, we're getting close to the end, which is, I'm rattled by. So my last, what would you advise an aspiring Jenny coming into the sector?
Well, following on from what I just said, then I think I didn't do that identification and delegation with a plan. It was more that the opportunities came up. So I would probably go into it with more of a plan to identify early on which parts I wanted to do and which parts I didn't want to do, which parts I was good at, which parts I wasn't so good at. And actually have more of a vision of who is needed at what point, and at what point you're able to afford those individuals. So I would definitely have more time dedicated to that team build. I would identify the things that make you happy, that make me happy, you happy.
Yes.
Because that is, when I'm happy, then everybody knows it and the business goes really well and everything is just easier. When I'm not happy, people feel it. And that's the same as everybody in the business.
Yeah.
And so it's far better for me to feed that happiness.
Yes.
With, you know, I get a buzz off people. I get a buzz off kind of, you know, certain things in the business. Then, but other people get a buzz off other things in the business.
Yeah, that's right.
Identifying that early on and knowing where that, what makes your heart sing.
Yes, love it.
Cheesy as that sounds. But me and Greg, my business partner, have definitely taken our time to get there. And for instance, he was looking at lots of other business kind of tasks and activities over the years. but actually he just loves creativity.
Yeah.
He loves creative. And actually that's the thing that makes him happier than
Yes.
So why bother employing lots of other people for him not to do that and for him to do the management part? When that's not the part.
Yeah, diluting all his energy. Yes.
Exactly. So identifying the things that make you happy is really important. And then probably the last one is building your network. And building a community around you. And I've been really lucky over the year, lucky, but also proactive over the years to know the B Corp is one of the communities that I get such energy from, because a lot of people within that community share similar values and similar ambitions. And so they inspire me, but we also help each other out in business. Whether that's making introductions for each other or just offering advice. So the B Corp community, but also I run a female leadership network. I get involved a lot on the local scene in Tunbridge Wells in the business community. And all of those different communities have helped me in so many different ways.
Wow.
And I like to think that I help kind of like others in lots of different ways as well. So I think I would be much more, I guess I would spend time early on finding my tribes and finding the sort of people that give me sort of strength and inspiration.
Oh, wow. What a fantastic note to end on. That's finding your tribes. I love it. Jenny, it's been fantastic sharing your thoughts. Really enjoyed it. Thank you very much indeed.
Absolute pleasure.